Welcome to SciGest, your fortnightly serving of digestible science from Plant and Food Research.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of SciGest. I'm Erin Stroud, and today I am joined by Dr. Robin McDiarmid. Welcome, Robin.
So nice to be here with you, Erin. A pleasure.
Oh. Well, it's great to have you back. Robin may be a familiar face, or at least a familiar voice, for some of the listeners on our podcast. Robin has been on our podcast before, recording an episode called The Good Rap on Viruses, which you should definitely check out if you've got some time. The best musical introduction we've ever had on this podcast. And also a great way to learn about how viruses rule the world.
They do.
In a good way. It's fantastic. But today we have Robin in for a Science Life for Me episode, so we'll start off by figuring out what it was that piqued your interest into science.
Yeah, so, family.
Yeah.
For me, family was so big. I grew up in Kerikeri in the Bay of Islands, and youngest of six, so I was born loud. So my neighbours who lived a long way away told me they could hear me crying. But my family sort of seems to be interested in science. I've got quite a few scientists in the family, in the extended family. And we think and talk about how does this work. And, you know, I had the amazing pleasure, didn't realise how special it was at the time, of course. A lot of weird and wacky uncles and aunts, but this one was quite exceptional. He'd come back from the States and chat away and show us the shiny stuff that was in his pocket and how it conducted electricity, and but it was a plastic, and he ended up getting a Nobel Prize.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So that was Alan, the late Alan McDiarmid. And I remember we used to go to this island every year and for summer. And he joined us one summer and he said, well, what, as a scientist, you've got to ask really simple questions. Mm. So I remember thinking, I was eight, I think. You know, what's a really simple question? I can remember, because I love the water, thinking, actually, how do you know when something's wet? Like, how do you tell when something, is it because it's cold? Like, if you put your hand into something that's warm, can you feel whether it's wet or whether it's just warm? Anyway, that was my sort of practice.
Oh, but you've blown my mind. Now I don't know how to answer the question.
Yeah, so that was really my upbringing. So in a way, that was some sort of destiny because, you know, you're really shaped as a kid. And we just have this strong drive as a family to look at the world in that type of way with a questioning mind.
I think family is so important for getting people into science. I'm always surprised at how many people come in and say that it was their family or something about their childhood that sparked their interest in science.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a combination of maybe nature and nurture when it comes to that.
Yeah, definitely. There were times as well at, you know, at school, I can see moments at school where that really like were aha moments as well. In my biology class, when the biology teacher, who happens to be my current neighbour, the gorgeous and wonderful Derry Godbert, was teaching us about viruses, and I remember I was fascinated that he was teaching us about the infectious unit, and that it wasn't the whole virus wasn't necessary, it wasn't the protein that was necessary, but it was the nucleic acid that was sufficient. And it, you know, because when you think back at school, how many moments of learning do you really remember? I remember where I was sitting. I remember that moment.
Amazing.
Yeah.
They do say, though, that your life is just a collection of moments, right? So you've just had a collection of virus-related moments.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally, because I grew up on a citrus and subtropical orchard. Subtropical, really, at that stage, because I was born in the 60s, mid-60s, I'm the end of the baby boomers, a 1965-er. And so at that stage, subtropical really meant Tamarillos. Now we're really taking a new bent on subtropical, getting into bananas and things. But I digress. And my father would always come back from the orchard about this time of the year when the Tamarillos were fruiting and just, oh, that damn virus. Frustrated that of the infections of the tree that causes lowered vigor and also the blemishing of fruit. So, yeah, that was just another sort of background noise that later I picked up.
Yeah. So that's sort of how you decided that you wanted to become a scientist, all of those things coalescing into one big unit?
Yeah, and another thing is that youngest of six, so my obviously then my five siblings are all older than me. I know this is an amazing leap logic. But that had a big impact of where my parents were at when I was right. ending my school days. And so they had this long-held dream of going sailing overseas. So we grew up sailing, which was just a community thing that happened, you know, sort of seems to be a bit of a luxury now, but it was a very much a community sport and lots of people did that in the Bay of Islands where I grew up. And they had planned to sail overseas up to the Pacific the year after I finished my schooling.
Oh, okay, yeah.
As it happened, my mum got sick, but was really keen for us to go, so we went. And but it was just the lower half of the family, the number four, five, and six that went. And so we sailed around the South Pacific from Aupua up to Tonga, Tonga to Fiji, Fiji to Vanuatu, Vanuatu to New Caledonia home, 6 months, fantastic experience. Fantastic experience, but I actually got bored.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, because I was 17, 18. Yeah. I was 18 then. And my schoolmates had gone to university. And when I was sailing back home, I realised, you know, this, I appreciated it. But I also realised this type of sort of vagrant lifestyle's not for me. I'm more driven.
Yeah.
And I want to go to university and I don't want to stop with just a bachelor's. I want to go further. So that was another sort of insightful moment where actually this is, I do want to push this further. I do have this drive. Yeah.
It's like an extended shower thought. You know, you always come up with the direction that you want your life to go in when you're in the shower, but you're on a boat for 6 months with,
yeah,
stuck with four and five.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a
good
way to do it.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting, those spots that you can contemplate? Mm. Certainly for me, water is that spot.
Yeah.
And where you can just relax and let your mind wander and examine all sorts of possibilities. And yeah, that is definitely where I landed. And also influenced, of course, by who I was with. I was with my family and they're really strongly asking how and why. And my lovely brother Murray is one could say protagonist or one could say antagonist. Anyway, he's always getting me to think deeply about all sorts of things. So, yeah, that was definitely how I landed, literally, and then went to university with that thought in mind. But before I went to university, my mother died, and that had just huge, huge, huge impact on me.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Just such a central part of family.
Yeah.
You know, you can hear it's really deep. And my family flew apart, the central hub. I didn't expect to get upset, but, you know, that's how it is. It was decades ago. And I think of that young girl who went off to Dunedin. That was tough. So for those listening, you don't need to do well in your first year. For those listening, if you've got a situation like that, do put your hand up and say, actually, I want some help in passing.
Yeah.
Because the wound was deep. You know, it was just a couple of weeks after my mum died that I packed my bag with no help. I had to use her clothes. Because I was going to a cold place. I didn't have any warm clothes. I'd just been in the South Pacific. And yeah, it really affected my life. I'm a gay woman and I didn't know that at the time. And as I was sort of adventuring into that space, it also really held me back because I thought I was seeking my mother, which I wasn't. But, you know, that was my immediate thought. Mm. Oh, you know, don't be silly. all you're trying to do is replace your mother, but that was so not the case.
Mm.
So, yeah, tough times. Oh, gosh, 20s are hard.
No, thank you for sharing that with us, Robin. Yeah. I think it can be really tricky because, as you may know, my dad passed away just before I went to the third year of university, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember walking into the lectures for the first time and just feeling very untethered.
Yeah.
And I think if you're unlucky enough to have lost a parent in your 20s, you probably know what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's
and
tough.
It's very important to ask for help if you're going through the university or any space.
Any space. And at that time, you know, counselling was more present for university people, but generally not, you know, not sort of the done thing. And certainly I know my father could have done with some counselling, but oh no, he was tough and they, what do you need that type of for? And actually, he didn't realise how his stability played out on the rest of the family, whereas it happened his instability.
Mm.
And yeah, so very important for those university years to be honest and ask for help. And yeah, I've personally I went through quite a weird and wacky time because I tried to gather family around me, and the way that I did that was I became hyper religious.
Mm.
Yeah, who knew that? And really what I was trying to do was have family around.
Yeah.
But that ended up really impacting on me again because, of course, being gay wasn't really the sort of the traditional religious example.
I can see there could have been a conflict.
So it wasn't until later that I was able to be in a space where I felt confident to come out and just know myself. All sorts of things happening at that time. And I think that is the case for many students. Lots of personal growth, understanding yourself while doing study.
Yeah.
The way that I handled it was I used my study as my anchor.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, quite a useful tool. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I dealt with it the same way.
Yeah.
I wonder, do you feel that you've found a sense of family in the science space?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, just sort of harking back to my own family, we re-coalesced in a different way. So that reformed, but it took a while. But, you know, this afternoon I'm going to go off to MPI and chat with the virologist there. And they're sort of like my cousins.
Yeah.
my research cousins and my uncles and aunts and children here at Plant and Food Research and University of Auckland, very much a family feeling and a family caring. Yes, it only does go so deep, but then special relationships, you know more about each other and can provide that deeper support to get through life's challenges.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, credit to you, Robin, because I think Robin and I work on the same floor, for context for the people who don't know. But when Robin walks into the building, it's always a little sense of family coming home because we don't often get to see you on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really are very adept at pulling family together. So thank you.
Well, my pleasure, because I need it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a heartbeat, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
So pivoting off that point.
How did we get onto that?
Slightly related. I suppose it's coming back to your job and how, you know, you're in a position to pull people together.
Yeah.
What is your job title at Plant and Food?
Right. Yeah, so at University of Auckland, which I also work at, so that's a 0.2 appointment, so a fifth of my time, I'm associate professor. Woo!
Woohoo!
What that hurdle. And then at Plant Food Research, I am science group leader, but I'm a co-science group leader. And this plays strongly into who I am because I have the wonderful other co-science group leader in Dr. Nick Waipara. And so we are Tangata Tiriti and Tangata Whenua science group leaders. And so what we're trying to do here is model that leadership of treaty partners and trying to bring that into plant and food research. And we've been there for a year. I'm not sure that we've really found our feet and our stride in delivering on that yet. Others can be the judge. But we're really wanting to bring that treaty partnership model into our family, into our organisation, and see where that grows and develops.
Oh, it's been fantastic working under it. It's great having two people.
That's great.
Can't complain.
Yeah, I mean, for Nick and I, we're like siblings.
Yes.
We can, we're sort of made of the same DNA, and we can work positively with each other independently and then just check in and, whoa, I'm so glad you did that. Have you thought about this? And then go off again and come back. And it's so delightful to work with somebody that you have entire trust in.
Yeah.
And that independent power of two is, and then coming back again, it's just, we can get so much more accomplished in what we're dreaming about.
Mm. So I suppose in recent years, because I was actually listening back to your past podcast, and you were saying you're a principal investigator.
Yep.
So you've come off the tools a little bit. How was that?
Good and bad.
Yeah.
Sort of backtracking a little bit, I'll get you into sort of up to speed with what I do, which is virology.
Mm.
And that is, I got hooked. Another moment was when I was doing my master's on deer antler development. Does that sound like virology? No, because it's not. I went to all of the talks that were at the biochemistry department in University of Otago, where I did my master's. And I heard this wonderful talk by Gail Timmerman-Vaughan.
Mm.
And she was talking about potato virus Y and potato and developing up a method to be able to manage that virus, and it was using a GMO. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I know that potatoes are related to Tamarillos.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my dad always being frustrated with this virus. Can we use the same sort of technology to counter this virus? And so I went immediately over to the science library and found out the viruses were also related.
Mm.
So I got back in contact with her and asked her, you know, well, could we do this? And so she ended up putting me in touch with Richard Forster,
mm-hmm.
who was up here, and he ended up advertising for half a technician or a PhD student. I always remember that, half a technician. I guess it was the same amount of money, but it was definitely a different amount of effort.
mm-hmm.
Anyway, I ended up securing that PhD position.
Pivoting
from deer antlers, and that really began my passion in virology. And so then I finished my PhD here at Plant and Food. It was first of all DSIR, then Hort Research, and when I was doing my PhD, and I did it through the University of Auckland. So now I'm sort of phenocopying that in what I currently do. And then when I finished, I thought, well, maybe I can learn more about RNA biology. So I went over to UC Berkeley and did a postdoc there on Drosophila RNA biology, because that was really quite advanced. What I didn't realize is that what we were doing was world leading, because we were finding out about this antiviral mechanism, RNA interference, here in New Zealand. And when I went to the States, they were not interested in it.
Mm.
Oh, that's a plant phenomenon. Well, actually, no, it happens in insects and even mammals.
Mm.
We know now. In fact, the people who described it, its mechanism got a Nobel Prize. So it's not just a plant phenomenon.
You were right to stick with it.
Yeah. Then after that, I did another postdoc, and that was in virology. And I am getting back to your question.
No.
Trust me. I worked really hard in those postdocs, and it was really unproductive in terms of publications.
Okay.
I found the context really difficult in a university where it's all about individuals, all about egos. That just isn't my way of being. Yeah.
I can't picture you.
I need family. I need that family feel, that team feel. It was great in terms of coming out and having a supportive environment on that side of things.
Mm.
And it took me a while to sort of get to a place where I was satisfied with where I'd got to personally in my personal development and was ready to come back to New Zealand. But I did come back forward and work here at Plant and Food Research a bit. In my holidays, I do work here because I really enjoyed the work. And I am losing track as to what your question was. Oh, I know. How did I step away? That's right. It was the working hard. Mm. I actually injured myself by working too hard and not taking those micro breaks.
Right.
And I couldn't walk for 2 months. I got horrendous sciatica.
Oh, gosh.
I couldn't lie down.
Oh, no.
For a month, I slouched over pillows. Mm. and eventually I got, the cortisone shots. Fortunately, my back was responsive to that, and so I'm up and about now. But that was one of the things that was like, oh my gosh, I can't depend on my physicality to do that. And when I came back, I was engaged in the lab. And so now when I step back, what it enables me to do is to be engaged in more research.
Yeah.
Because that was one of my frustrations. How can we do more? And actually by stepping back, you can be involved in more research projects, and that's the joy, is just seeing those research projects fly, offering ideas as to where they could go, and being involved in multiple, and also, of course, the wonderful people that are delivering on those science projects.
I think coming off the tools is a scary feeling for a lot of scientists because we're kind of taught to think that all we should want to do is research. But I think you had a good note there that it does let you champion other people's research as well. Mm. And that's super important. If we don't have those people doing that work, no science will get done.
Yeah. And let's just bring it back to family again. It's just a way of, I don't have children. And from my research side, my academic side, the students that I'm mentoring, whether it's directly or indirectly, hold that position in a way. They're lifelong relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's a joy to grow people, help or contribute to people growing. Yeah. And by the way, I am married and I do have, my wife does have children and I do have grandchildren, but, I haven't birthed a child.
You have your lab children as well.
I've birthed many lab children.
So what are you working on now, Robin?
I'm really alight around two things. Mm-hmm. One is that viruses have been so misunderstood.
Mm.
So misunderstood. because of the way that we've discovered them, we always associate them with bad.
Mm.
But we're now going into a place where we can discover the good ones and how they can be so beneficial. And they really do rule the world. So I'll let you listen to the other podcast that focuses on that. And the other aspect is this tangata tiriti, tangata whenua side. Yes, on the social side, in terms of individuals and relationships between Crown and tangata whenua, but also in terms of the plants, because and their associated microbiome, which of course does include viruses. Because all of our productive, I don't like that term, but it's the one we use, the productive plants in New Zealand, the crop plants, are exotic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of like the colonising of New Zealand, and the indigenous flora is sort of like the tangata whenua being here. And in the past, we've just thought that those crop plants are separate, and we've how does this mirror? I mean, and that we've just claimed the land and wiped off that scrubby bush. You know, I'm saying this with some sarcasm, in case you don't pick that up, and then growing that crop plant, but not being aware of its context at all.
Yeah.
And New Zealand is so special because our flora and our fauna are unique.
Mm.
We've got such a high percentage of there's so many endemic species.
Got there in the end.
And how can New Zealand's indigenous flora and fauna be part of that crop system?
Mm-hmm.
Or could the crop system actually be within the plants that naturally grow here? So that's a big learning space, I think, and for research, I think it's a big opportunity for us as a country, because the story that it'll be able to tell, I think we could have a totally New Zealand type of regenerative production that is uniquely from Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Mm.
So I just think that's an opportunity that, but it takes the whole whānau.
Yeah.
To be part of that. And it's not something that an individual or a small group can lead. It is a Aotearoa New Zealand Inc. opportunity.
It's very cool. It sounds like a very exciting research space to be in.
Yes, and it's not ignited from my own thinking. Somebody like Hone Ropata has totally contributed to that way of thinking.
Awesome scientists.
Albie Marsh, yeah. Nick Waipara, they're... Mm. You know, it's sort of a coalescing concept, yeah.
Yeah, very lucky to have all those people in one place so we can work together, hey?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the types of opportunities of igniting each other's imaginations in ways that no individual would. You know, if we can bring together in a positive way that cultural clash that sparks new opportunities, just an absolute delight, and let's bring it on.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, Robin, has your career gone to plan?
Not at all.
I may have some insight into this question, so it might be a loaded question.
Yeah, I think that the probably the biggest, most informative U-turn that I made was, so I mentioned the topic of my PhD, which was around the Tamarillo virus space, and so what I ended up doing was generating some genetically modified Tamarillos to be resistant to the virus.
Hmm.
And they were. So that science part worked perfectly. Unfortunately, at that time, we only really thought about the science part and we didn't think about what next. I mean, I worked with the Tamarillo industry and they were really keen on that too, but we didn't go beyond and ask, is this a technology that our society wants? And so, you know, I wasn't alone in the production of GMOs. Other people were doing it too. So we ended up having a field trial in Kerikeri, my hometown. And there were people who disagreed and protests. And, you know, that was really eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were a lot of protests nationally. There was the Royal Commission that investigated, looking at what is the position that we might take as a country. And effectively, New Zealanders have said, no, this is not the type of technology that we want to use. For whatever reason, it doesn't really matter why. But scientists really need to listen to our society. We need to work in step. And so that was really eye-opening for me, because here we had a piece of technology that worked very well, but a societal conflict where it wasn't acceptable. And so my U-turn was to listen to the context and be engaged with society and responsive, and working on ways that are not GMO, ways that are socially acceptable and culturally acceptable to combat viruses. And so that got me into looking at mild strains and started my journey of not just thinking about viruses as a threat, but appreciating the wonder of them and that they can actually be beneficial, and that we can use, a virus to fight a virus. So, yeah, that was my biggest U-turn.
I just love that story. I think it's, or that part of your research history, I think it's amazing that, you know, we do want to serve society as scientists. I think that's the main purpose of science, is to answer questions for society.
Mm.
And it's really important as scientists that we remember what the purpose of our research is and who it's for at the end of the day.
Who we serve.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a different answer depending on your different place of work. You know, that technology might be very acceptable in different places, mm-hmm. but let's match that acceptability to the technology we use.
Yeah.
And the time, you know, things may change. We might find that highly acceptable in other circumstances.
And how cool for the public to know that scientists really do listen to what society wants and doesn't want. It's
I hope so. I hope that is becoming more clear that we are servants.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned Kerikeri a couple of times, Robin. I'm beginning to think you might be quite fond of the place.
Well, yes. You know, when I was over in the States, my umbilical cord was sort of stretched as far as it could go. I needed to return. I knew when I had the opportunity to teach high school students over there, and I turned it down. Mm. These are not my people. And when I came back to New Zealand, you know, this is my place, but my specific place is up in Te Tai Tokorau in Northland. And my specific place within that is Kerikeri, Waipapa, Pewhairangi, Ipipiri region. And that's where my older siblings are now coalescing to. Mm-hmm. My older sister, Catherine, never left. I think she did go away for a few months.
Strong sense of home then.
Strong sense of home. Mm. Not to the same property, but to that same community.
Yep.
And so I moved there in 2014. My wife was really keen to go. And so it took a little while to organise that change. And PFR supported me in making that change and just working out how I could still care and support for students, have the right amount of connectivity, and also not cost too much, so staying with friends and family here in Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
And then finding the right property to move to in Kerikeri. So that's been a joy. And so I've ended up in Waipapa, which is a place I really love, and it's minutes from Kerikeri. And Waipapa is where my family are re-coalescing, with more and more of them returning as people retire from their jobs in different places across the Motu. And that place is a place that I care about deeply and wholly.
Mm.
What can I contribute there is really on my mind now. And so I'm in the process of talking, and that takes a while. Re-finding your community.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find it a bit tricky because, you know, I travel quite a lot. I try to spend time back here in Auckland with this family. But spending time in the community there and finding out what the heartbeat is, what can I offer, and how does that mix with what other people are doing and dreaming of?
I think science is a really taxing job sometimes. Obviously we love it, we're here because we want to be here, but I think it's really important to acknowledge that science does take a lot from you sometimes, and you have to be very clear with what you won't trade for science. So it sounds like home and that sense of community and being able to give back is something you wouldn't trade for science.
Well, actually it is the same for me. The line is that that's not the distinction.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm asking, how can I offer the science that I know, the research possibilities that I'm aware of, and also the broader PFR, how can we coalesce there? What can Plant and Food Research, the University of Auckland, the other contexts that I am aware of, how can we, what offerings would be appropriate in that context? So that still is part of my science life.
Mm.
I offer myself very deeply in my research. My boundary, thank you, Linz, my wife, she's always trying to remind me about my boundaries, is my home life and my escape on my boat.
Mm.
So for me, you know, working on the property, I do a lot of digging of holes. It's great. I just think about the earth. And
so you're not off the tools then.
And also working on my lovely yacht and sailing around the bay is, you know, that fills up my jam jars.
Yeah.
And I just, my mind is free again. I can think about, I can think big, but it's not anchored to my work life. I can think beyond that. Fills up my soul.
It seems to me, from the outside looking in, Robin, that your path through science has been a very full circle event. You know, you've kind of gone and come back, and even with the sailing, you've gone and you've come back. So that must be quite a nice feeling.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's sounding a bit terminal.
An ongoing circle, a full ongoing circle.
Yeah, and I think the next round of the circle is about that building around in the community. And somebody like Bruce Campbell, who's no longer at PFR but has moved up to Kerikeri and has actually got the pleasure of spending time deeply in the community, is a really important person to link to. Because we're working in that space of connecting with mana whenua there and coming in. I'm coming in as from a Crown Research Institute. We're talking about a place where the Treaty of Waitangi was signed. There are relationships to be mended, and this is not a fast-paced process, conversation. To work together, we need to know each other, trust each other, make mistakes and understand how we respond to those mistakes, and develop things together going forward. That's what I see as the opportunity, and it takes time. You can't rush it. It takes the time it takes. So that's the space I'm in there. And, you know, I don't know what the future is, but I think that it's going to be bright in that space. When? I have no idea.
Time will tell.
Time will tell. And in the meantime, you know, connecting in with what else is happening at Plant and Food Research and the University of Auckland and beyond, of course. But, yeah, it's... normality still chugs along, and you know, people are growing and doing things, we're progressing, but this particular area is a watch and see space.
Very cool. So my friend, my lovely friend Kathleen, put me on quite a few years ago actually to the concept of ikigai. Have you heard of it before? It's a little bit of an abstract one.
Go on, explain it.
It's a concept in Japanese culture, I suppose, which refers to something that gives a person a sense of purpose or a reason for living. And having your ikigai will help you make decisions in your future and lead you down the right path. And I think if you're lucky enough to have found that in your life, you will probably be in a better holistic place. It sounds like that might be one of yours.
Yeah, so I understand that concept, and losing a parent early makes you realise that this is it. don't wait.
Yeah.
And what did you say before, a collection of moments? You know, realising that as scientists we are in a wider society, it's really important, and that here we are as whole beings doing stuff we love, but what we do is molded by who we're with. And offering that into the Aotearoa New Zealand space is, that for me is the ikigai. What is it that I might be able to offer in that space? That, and also being part of the journey of others, is perhaps it's what parents feel. It's certainly what I feel, just the joy of seeing others develop and grow and be their own whole person. That is, I guess people say, well, what would you want to be said at your funeral? If I can accomplish those types of things along those lines, then that would be, to me, very satisfying. And I just love seeing people grow. And I think that our opportunities to grow in science in New Zealand, its own special science linked with Mataranga Māori, is an absolute jewel for New Zealand. It's a real treasure. Where can we take it? Being part of that journey is, yes, part of the ikigai.
Well, thank you, Robin, for sharing that collection of memories or collection of stories with us. It's always great to have you on the podcast, and I hope that our listeners take as much away from our conversation today as I have. So thank you for being here. And also thank you to our listeners once again for joining us on the podcast. Make sure you check us out on all of your favourite podcast platforms or on our website. Mā te wā.
Mā te wā.